And good morning, and welcome to Focus. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Harriet Williamson is the producer for the program, and Jason Croft is at the controls for this hour. And I'm very happy to have here in the studio with me to talk for this hour of Focus, Phyllis Wise. She is a vice president and chancellor at the University of Illinois here in Urbana-Champaign. She is the chief executive officer for the Urbana-Champaign campus. She started in this job last fall, and that was the last time we talked. She had not been on the job very long, and we asked her to come back and to spend another hour with us, having completed now two semesters and gone through some kind of rocky times here at the university, and she was very generous to say yes, indeed she would. So we're open to questions. I have some things that I will ask. People who are listening are certainly welcome to call if you have questions. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. You may also send a question by email if you'd like to do that. And that is will-talk@illinois.edu. At any point, questions are welcome. Well, thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
We appreciate it. It has been a kind of, as I said before we got going here, kind of tumultuous time here of your first two semesters. I don't have any idea what your expectations of the job were when you came here, but probably not that there would be so much unrest, including a change in administration at the very top of the university.
No, I didn't expect that change at the very top. I came with great anticipation, and working for Mike was rewarding in many ways, but I think that the change that has happened that allows Bob Easter to take over on July the 2nd is a wonderful one. I look forward to working with him.
Do you think that all of this, and not just what has happened over the last year, even going back to some of the previous turmoil, do you think that has hurt the image of the University of Illinois?
Well, it certainly didn't help. I think the wonderful thing about very strong universities is that they are resilient and they're able to go on and learn from those lessons and build on those lessons and become even better. But it's not I think the easiest way to make progress, and I think that it would hurt us had we let any of those situations go on for a longer period of time than we did.
Mm-hmm. Well, how long does it take to rebuild from something like that?
You know, I am really grateful for the fact that this coming year we'll have a chance to really put our minds and our time and our energy and all of our wisdom toward looking toward the future for this great university. And we will not have any distractions, so to speak. And I think that we have been thinking about this ever since President Hogan announced his resignation. And we have been focusing on that throughout this semester. I've been doing a lot of this listening and learning tour and also the Visioning Future Excellence exercise. And I think I have a much better idea of the culture, the future, the potential, the accomplishments, the history, the strengths of this campus than I did in October when I spoke with you.
Mm-hmm. Clearly here, I think a central issue, and maybe it was the central issue, the disconnect between the president and the faculty had to do with this business of shared governance.
Mm-hmm.
The university is very different from other kinds of institutions. You, as an administrator, you may have strong ideas about what you think should happen, but the faculty expect to be heard. And I'm sure that it's very difficult to balance between what you think is the thing to do and what the faculty think is the thing to do. How, as an administrator, how do you do that?
Well, I've always thought of my job as primarily being an enabler, someone who can hear what the faculty and the staff and the students believe is right. And sometimes, most of the time, a chancellor or a provost has a chance to hear more voices than any single other leader, a dean or a chair. And to be able to bring that together and create synergies that hardly anyone else can do. You know, it's said that universities are unique in their governance. In actuality, I think any great leader, whether it's in the not-for-profit world or the corporate world, if they don't listen to their constituents, is not going to be an effective leader. Mm-hmm. So we just have that in an organized structure. That is, that there are actual rules by which we live. And I think I embrace that idea that listening is part of acting.
I would like to ask you some questions, and I'm not exactly sure how you would feel about them, but about your relationship with the former president, with Mike Hogan. And there was a fair amount of hearsay in the local media about your relationship with him, including, I remember reading comments where somebody said that you felt that you had been bullied. And I'm thinking, no, I don't really know this woman very well, but she doesn't strike me as the kind of person who is going to be bullied by anybody. Did you feel bullied?
No, I did not feel bullied. I mean, I think Mike Hogan has and had very strong opinions in certain areas of governance. And I shared with him my views. Sometimes they were congruent with his, and sometimes they differed with his. But I did not feel bullied by him.
How would you characterize your working relationship that you had with him?
I think we were getting to know each other. We didn't have very much time to do that, actually. I was focusing on the campus because that's what I felt I really had to get to know the best. I had occasional meetings with him, and on many issues we agreed, and the conversations were warm and very worthwhile. But there were a few in which we had different opinions, and we were working those out.
Do you think that people somehow misunderstood him or misread him?
No, I think that people drew conclusions from their own interactions with him, and I really wasn't around for the majority of time that he was the president here, so I don't know whether their opinions were based upon different kinds of interactions that they had with him than what I had with him. But I respect the people with whom he had differences of opinion. And so, you know, it's hard for me to judge.
It seems just, again, from the few conversations I had with him, it seemed that he thought, and perhaps also the trustees had thought, that some of the difficulties that we had at the university before he came had to do with the fact that there were no clear line. There were not clear lines of authority, and he seemed to feel that it was very important to establish clear lines of authority and say the authority is located in the office of the president. Was that a mistake?
Well, you know, when I interviewed with him, I told him that I thought my job was to be the strongest advocate for this campus and a very good citizen of the university as a whole. And so I was very upfront in terms of what I thought my job was. And I certainly acknowledged that he was the president of the whole university, and I realized that I reported to him. So I don't think there was any misunderstanding, really. The interpretation of that and putting that into action may have differed on his part and my part. But I don't think we concentrated on that so much in our many conversations that we had between October and January.
It seems that in a lot of people's minds a big issue was this issue of whether the chancellors, the people that were the top official on the individual campuses, whether they were in fact the top official on their individual campuses. I mean, you know, those issue, and it was this issue of, I think there's this issue that this thought that each campus has its own personality.
Yeah.
These places are different, and that some level of autonomy is important.
Right. So I would agree with you. I think that there's always a balance between centralization and the authority of the president versus the authority of the chancellors of each of our campuses. I understood from Chairman Kennedy and from reading the statutes that the chancellor of each of the campuses was the CEO, is the CEO of each of the campuses. Mm-hmm. And one of the magnificent parts about the University of Illinois as a whole is that each of us has very distinct strengths, distinct histories, and distinct potential. And that in some areas, the synergies that can be created by having the three of us work together is marvelous. In other areas, the distinctiveness is, in fact, what makes us so strong as a university. That Urbana-Champaign, with its long history of almost 150 years, its land-grant mission, Its strengths, particularly in the area of engineering, math, and science, but also its wonderful comprehensiveness in the arts and humanities and social science is what brings us to the table with something to offer when we go to conversations with the other two chancellors.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Phyllis Wise. She is the chancellor of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. If you have questions, I have a couple of people here ready to go, one who's been pretty patient, so we'll get to some calls. And we'll continue. I'll continue to ask questions, of course. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We'll start with someone in Champaign, line number one right here. Hello.
Good morning, David, and good morning, Chancellor Wise.
Yeah. Hi.
I want to give you some context. I'm recently retired from the university after 30 years of teaching and also had the opportunity to hear you speak at Champaign Rotary. And I was immensely impressed with how articulate and sensible you are. And I just wanted to say that having you as chancellor and Bob Easter as interim president gives me great hope after this rough period that we've been through, that you seem to be genuinely interested in hearing what the faculty have in mind and what they feel, because after all, we're all here to serve students, and it's been my experience that the faculty, while they may be very strong individuals with different points of view, when it comes down to it, we're all here for the same reason and the same goal. And I think you understand that, and I'm looking forward to great things.
Well, I completely agree with you, and I thank you for the compliment. I would agree with you that I think that working with Bob as the president and me in my position as chancellor will be a magical combination. Bob really, I mean, has such long history here and experience not only on this campus but globally that his wisdom and his vision will be unsurpassable. So I'm really eager to start working with him.
Well, I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. We'll go on. Here's another caller. This is someone in Champaign County, line number two. Hello.
Well, I'll try to be pleasant, too. But I wanted to ask, I just can't believe that the U of I is still opposing the release of the clout list names. It seems that anybody who's trafficking sort of least unethical and perhaps criminal behavior, like getting special treatment like that, the university shouldn't feel that they have any kind of pledge of confidentiality. It shouldn't set a precedent for regular students. But so I was surprised to see that it was still being opposed. The other question I have is about the labor relations, and I don't know how much of this actually crosses your desk, but I'm informed that a lot of the unions and the workers are dismayed that the U of I has hired this firm, Seyfert Shaw, for $3 million. It's a reputation as a union-busting and a very obstructionist sort of consulting firm. I would think that the U of I already has quite a few adequate negotiators, and since $3 million is like 10% of the $30 million, that would have pushed through the percentage increase of wages that was authorized by the legislature, at least in one calendar year, fiscal year. That's just unacceptable, and I think that more people ought to know about it. And I'm wondering whether you have an opinion on this kind of outside advice. It doesn't seem like a very good strategy towards collegiality with the people that make the U of I operate for the sake of the students. And I guess I'll hang up and see if what that starts. Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your questions as well, even though they're more critical. Let me say that relative to opposing release of the names of the students, I think that is an ongoing question that is still being decided. But we have committed to the students not to treat their information confidentially, and we believe that we must hold to that commitment. Relative to labor relations, I have to say I don't know about this at all. I didn't know whether or not we have recruited anyone to help us in labor negotiations, so I need to find out more about that.
Other questions are certainly welcome. We'd take as many as we can. You can call. You can give us an email here in Champaign-Urbana, 333 800-222-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu.
So, David, I have to interrupt you and say,
yes,
we
ma'am.
Have to leave 5 minutes at the end for me to ask you questions because, as I understand it, you're retiring at the end of the week.
That's what they tell me.
Oh, are you not? We'd love to hear that.
Yes, it's true. And actually, that leads into the next area that I was going to ask you about. Just because it has certainly now been reported, as if people didn't know, that there will be a lot of people retiring. We have reported it here. It's been reported in the newspaper.
Yes.
My situation is the same with a lot of these folks, that it has to do with changes mm-hmm. in the way people's retirement benefits are calculated, and so mm-hmm. that there are many people who have felt that it was to their benefit to retire before the end of this fiscal mm-hmm. year. And so we're talking about, I think the paper reported here at this campus, 491 people, which was roughly twice what were retiring this time last year. And the number, if you look at all across all the campuses, the number is much bigger. And we're talking about senior people. How will the university weather the loss of all these people?
With some difficulty. I mean, I have to say that to have this many people with a long history of experience who know the way things work, have in-depth and broad experience across the university is not going to be easy to carry on without you. And we have had some time to think about this because we knew this might happen. And so we've tried to put people in place before you all retire so that there can be some training period, cross-training period. But there's no doubt about it. This is a very difficult situation for the university. I think that what has happened, what we do have to understand is what has happened is that there is a much larger number of people retiring by July 1 because of the pension changes. But by the end of the year, I am not sure whether it's going to be as much of an increase spread out over the calendar year. But that doesn't take away from the fact that we are losing incredible excellence in terms of people like you. And David, I mean, I understand you've been here for 29 years.
Well, ma'am, actually, it's been 35, but
whoa!
Who's counting?
Oh, I
have been here 35 years and have been associated with this program that's actually been on the air now a little over 30 years.
Uh-huh.
We had our 30th anniversary last year. So,
yeah,
I've been here for a while. I should know how to do it by now.
And so I'd love to know what your favorite interviews were and your biggest surprises and your biggest successes. I mean, you carry with you an incredible amount of history.
Well, I have done a lot of interviews.
Yeah.
That's true. It's funny that, in a way, you always, the one that seems to be freshest in your mind is the last one that you did.
Uh-huh.
People ask that question often, what was your favorite? And I have done thousands now, so I guess I can't. Nothing really stands out in your mind. And the ones that went badly, you've just.
That you remember,
I just edited those out. I don't even think about those.
Between you and your wife, oh my goodness. And then the producer, too. I mean, Harriet leaving.
We should look at it as an opportunity to have some younger, fresher minds in
True.
Here, and because I think the commitment to doing this kind of show won't change.
No,
you know, so it would be a little bit different. People will get used to a different person. And the thing about radio is that it's very much of a habit,
mm-hmm.
and people bond with the folks that they listen to on the radio,
uh-huh.
and I understand that. And people have said here, actually, once it became public that I was going, I have said a lot of really nice things, for which I am grateful. And so I just hope people will continue to support the station and continue to listen, and there will be programming. And at least for a couple of months, you can hear reruns of me.
Oh, good. Good.
So my voice, Friday will be the last day here, really.
Uh-huh.
But if you turn on the radio a week from today, I'll be there.
Good.
So I'll be there for a while.
So you're going to let us just slowly transition.
Yes, yes. You'll have to wean yourselves off of me. I was looking actually at an article in the newspaper from last year. And one of the things that that was about was that the fact that at that point, the university had just approved more than 130 tenure track faculty searches, and the story noted that over the previous couple of years that the number of tenure track faculty at the university had shrunk, and that they were saying that they were going to post these positions, and the expectation might be that people would start in August of this year. So already there was a deficit, perhaps, in tenure track faculty, and you take that plus the people are retiring. That's a big change.
It is a big change, and I think that you're right. We had shrunk the number of faculty members purposefully because of the budget cuts, and had saved some money, but realized that we just could not carry on with the excellence in the learning environment with so few faculty members. So with that in mind, we have started recruitments over the last year for about 130 positions. Even with all the new technologies of learning, where we can get to students in different ways and provide them with an excellent experience, it still depends a lot upon face-to-face interactions with faculty that is just not possible through any technological means.
Yeah. One of the things that I think it was clear in both of these stories that there was someone who was saying that it will not necessarily be the case that people are going to be replaced one for one.
No.
And so that suggests, or perhaps leads to this question, is this an opportunity for some kind of shift in focus or emphasis?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that the university, higher education is a living organism. And we always want to be responsive to the demands of the students as well as their employability and where the world is going. And so as we recruit new faculty, they will not necessarily be in the areas that faculty have retired or left. And that always gives you a chance to reconfigure a bit and be able to meet societal needs and student needs. I should also add that as a research university, we are always looking to faculty to be able to recruit faculty who can be at the cutting edge of discovery of their own discipline. And so it allows us a chance to really recruit the very best. And the University of Illinois is still a very, very wonderful place to be. So I'm confident that we'll be able to hire great people.
Are there particular areas or particular fields where that you think are really important and perhaps poised to grow even more than they are now?
I think that the principles that were used in recruiting this group of faculty members for which we released 130 positions was done prior to when I got here. And there were certain areas that were focused upon more extensively than others. And this is all under the provost's purview and the vice provost for academic affairs as well. So, yes, there were certain areas in which we asked for proposals so that we could really go out and aggressively recruit in those areas.
I was really, and again, going back to this reporting on this from last year, I was really struck by the things that there was particular emphasis on four areas: information technology and society, human health and wellness, energy and sustainability, global issues. And I don't think anybody could really disagree with those things being important. I just wondered, what does that say something about where the university is going, how the university is changing, what sort of things will be important in the future?
Yes, these are areas in which we'll put in a significant amount of differential investment. And interestingly, I've been carrying out this visioning future excellence, as you know, and the areas that are coming up in terms of what are going to be society's greatest challenges in the next 20 to 50 years and how should we position ourselves to be ready to meet those kinds of challenges are coming up with some of the very same areas. And so the recruiting that has been going on this year and the additional recruiting that we'll be doing over the next 5 years will probably focus more deeply in these areas. But that's not to say that we won't be recruiting in other areas as well. The fine arts, the humanities, and the social sciences are areas in great demand from our students and is what makes us a wonderfully comprehensive university. Mm-hmm. So it's not that we will never be hiring another person in those, but we might be hiring more people in those areas that you described.
There has been an effort ongoing now, I think at least for a couple of years, to try to look at everything the university does and say, what's the core mission? Where are we concentrating our resources? There are limits, so we're going to have to make some decisions about what we're doing. Having said that, are there things that that sort of stand out as being something where you'd say, maybe that was once our core mission, but it's really not anymore, and we can say we're just not going to do that anymore.
Right. Well, the Aviation Institute is one example of something that we're not going to be doing in the future. By and large, the decisions that are being made to consolidate departments or to eliminate programs are being done levels below me, in other words, by deans and heads of departments. And I totally trust their ability to do this far better than I could, in part because I'm so new here, but in part because the chancellor doesn't look at that level to see whether or not we should be recruiting this faculty member with this in this discipline or that faculty member in another. The deans should be totally aware of the strengths and the potential in their different colleges and should be making these kinds of judgments.
One specific, and again, I'm not sure quite how much you have been involved in this conversation, but I just thought I would ask you about what is the Police Training Institute.
Right.
It's one of those things that was identified. Someone said, well, we're spending money on this. The state really isn't helping. It's not our core mission. We're going to close that.
Right.
And some people here in the area, some area lawmakers, said that they thought that it actually was important, that they wanted to see it continue. And now it looks as if it probably will. I just wonder what you think about that.
Yes, you're right. We had considered it in our stewarding excellence exercise that it was not central to our mission and that we were putting in a significant amount of money to it. When we decided to close it down, we did get responses from the community at large that, in fact, it really was one of the services that they expected the university to do. And so we went back and looked at it, and we are right now in discussion with PTI to make sure that we do not use student tuition to subsidize the PTI and that it must come from other money, either from the state or other organizations or from tuition of the students who are going to enroll in it. And if we can do that and if we can add to that a research mission in terms of police training, then I think it is worthwhile continuing.
We have a couple of callers. We'll get to them in just a moment. We need to take a short break. We're talking this morning in this hour with Phyllis Wye. She's the chancellor of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We'll talk some more in a moment. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, Alec Baldwin. He's starring in two new films. He's a long-haired club owner in Rock of Ages, the big-screen adaptation of the Broadway musical. He also stars in the new Woody Allen comedy, To Roam with Love. And, of course, he's best known for his role as Jack Donaghy on the hit NBC series 30 Rock. Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Christie Clinic, proud to be a part of Champaign-Urbana and our surrounding communities for more than 80 years. Starting from a single Champaign location, Christie now serves patients from 14 clinic locations. More about Christie Clinic in your community is at ChristieClinic.com.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you listening. Tomorrow morning on the program, in the 10 o'clock hour, the guest is Jonathan Haidt. He's professor of psychology at University of Virginia, and we will be talking about his book, The Righteous Mind. The subtitle kind of says it all, Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion. Also tomorrow, we will talk about college student mental health, and this is an issue that is of a concern to administrators at colleges and universities all across the country. Not only is student life stressful, that can be an issue, but there are students that come to college with past history of mental health issues, and that can also be a challenge. And providing services for them, making sure that their experience is a good one and that they stay well. So we'll try to talk about some of those things, and our guest tomorrow will be Ben Locke. He works at the Counseling and Clinical Psychology Center at Penn State. And then maybe I'll tell you one more. We'll do it Wednesday at 10 o'clock. We'll talk with Bryce Hoffman. He's an award-winning journalist, and we'll talk about a book that he has written about Alan Mulally, the guy who came in to save, and I think some people would say was pretty successful in saving the Ford Motor Company. He's written a book about that. Some other shows, too, for the rest of the week. You can look at the schedule by going to our website, which is will.illinois.edu. You can also follow us on Twitter at Will Public Media. In this hour, I'm very happy to have here in the studio with me Phyllis Wise. She is the Chancellor, she's Vice President and Chancellor, University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. She's been here since last fall, and this is her second visit with us. And questions are certainly welcome. I have a couple of people ready to go in Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. And we'll go right there, line number one, for another caller. Hello.
Hello. Chancellor, it seems so irresponsible for the state of Illinois to appropriate funds for a new building next to Beckman Institute. It's probably going to cost $40 or $50 billion. And last Friday in the News Gazette, the article stated on Illinois' indebtedness of $43 billion. That's $10 billion more than New Jersey owes and $33 billion more than California owes. But I'm hoping you can tell me that this new building will be worth it because, and I'll let you finish that. I'll listen over the air. Thank you.
So you are probably talking about the new ECE building, which ground was broken last fall. A very significant amount of the money that goes to this building is being given by donors. And so the state has pitched in a significant amount of money as well. What we realize is that our College of Engineering, which is ranked as one of the top five in the country as a whole, the whole college, and has departments in it that rank as number one or two in the country, depends upon its ability to have the facilities that are required for the kind of research and teaching that we do. If we are going to continue to be a preeminent College of Engineering, then and be able to recruit the very finest faculty, the facilities are foundational to this ability. And so I would argue that what we are doing is ensuring that in the future, the university will continue to be a major contributor to our knowledge and to our teaching abilities in the area of engineering writ large.
Generally, maybe I'll ask a general question here about state funding. I believe that we're looking at a 5.9% reduction from what we got last year.
It's about that. Right? It's in that range, yes.
And that's I think that's for all of funding for all of higher education, not just
Illinois, but Illinois has its share of that decrease.
And probably it's bigger than anybody else's share because
percentage wise it's probably the same, but in terms of numbers of dollars, yes, of course we are the largest university system in the state, and so our portion of that is very large.
So how do you cope with that?
Well, we are trying to be as careful as we can in our expenditures, for sure. We are focusing in on the things that we think are most important. We have put away some money in reserves from the previous economic budget cut, and we will put some of that to bear, but certainly we are going to be starting many fewer newer initiatives than we would have had we been able to maintain the budget that we had last year.
I think also accompanying that cut, there's also a reduction in what I think is the primary state aid program for the need-based state program for students, the MAP, the Monetary Award Program.
Yeah,
that money's been cut.
Yeah, right. There's some discussion on that as well. We haven't gotten the final bill signed by the governor yet. But I should say that we have redoubled, if not retripled, our efforts in terms of raising money through philanthropy for student scholarships. I'm not sure of the exact numbers as to whether we filled that entire gap or not, but I can say that Access Illinois has been the focus in terms of philanthropy. It was a program that was started by President Hogan last year and is allowing us to offer more student scholarships and larger amounts of money this year than we ever have in the past.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's talk with another person here, Urbana, another Urbana caller. This is line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
If we could go back to the pension policy for a moment, I'd like to suggest that the future implications of this may be even greater than the immediate implications. We'll have a large number of people retiring this year, and that doesn't mean they're retiring simply a year early. Some of these people would have stayed on for 5, 10, or 15 more years quite happily, and they're usually among our very best faculty. But it seems to me the state's behavior is going to make it, first, much more likely that particularly younger faculty will be much more receptive to recruitment from outside. And secondly, that it will make it considerably more difficult to replace faculty, that recruitment will not be as successful because the inducements will be less, and there is a shadow hanging over the whole question that the state may not live up to its word in the future. Would you care to comment?
Well, I think all of those points that you raise are valid. There's no doubt that if we are not competitive with our peers in terms of the fringe benefits that we offer, we will suffer. And if other universities are able to offer more, then they will be able to what I call berry pick our very best faculty more effectively than they have in the past. That is why we are very aware of the need to think about whether or not we have to make up some part of the difference of what the state is not going to offer. And it's something that we've been discussing all year. But it is a very difficult situation, I must admit.
I have a friend who retired a few years back, and he told me a while back that a few weeks after he was hired, someone in industry came up to him and said, "I don't know what they're paying you, but I'll double it." Mm-hmm. And he thought about it, and then he went back and he said, "Well, given the university's atmosphere and the benefits, I'm staying where I am."
Mm-hmm.
And he retired with, I think, 29 years or something of that sort. But he said, if I had to do it over again, I'm not sure I would have given the same answer.
You know, I hope that is not true, but I can imagine that it might be. In my listening and learning tour last year, the one universal theme that came up in every single group that I met with was that they're here because of the people. And so I'm hoping that the quality of the collaborations and the quality of people that you will be able to work with if you are at the University of Illinois will still be a draw and will still make people want to come and want to stay. I can't tell you the number of times people said, "I came for 2 years and I was going to go on to someplace else, and I've been here for 30 or 40 years because the quality of the kind of work that I can do here is truly unique." So that's why losing great people is going to be a real challenge if that really happens.
Let me ask you this. I've jumped in on the caller. I'm sorry. We're kind of getting into our last 10 minutes, and I have another call I want to get to. Mm-hmm. It has in the past been fairly common practice for faculty to retire and then come back on some sort of a part-time basis. And for them, I think it's actually a good thing because they can set aside some of the duties of being a faculty that don't involve research.
Yeah.
Or so possibly they can concentrate much exclusively on the research or possibly doing some teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that now here going forward, though, that's going to be much more difficult than it has been in the past.
Yes, I understand that's true, that people who are rehired are limited to making 40% of what they made and also are limited to no more than 18 weeks of work during the year. So this combination of both the pension changing and also making it harder for us to rehire faculty makes the challenge more than either one of them alone. And we are facing that possibility and learning how to very carefully rehire people and follow the rules and regulations that have been put into place now, but still retain some of their expertise.
Hmm. Another caller. This is someone over in Indiana, Lafayette, Indiana. We'll go there. Line four. Hello.
Hello. My concern is Purdue University, also a land-grant college, is very similar to Illinois in science and engineering and agriculture being primary schools. And you may or may not know that the Governor Mitch Daniels has just been appointed by the Board of Trustees as president of the university. And he had appointed the majority of the Board of Trustees. And I think it's unethical for them to appoint him to be president. He also has no academic experience. He does not have a Ph.D., and I just wonder, what would one think of, and aside from his politics, I don't mean that, but I just really feel he's not qualified, what would one think of a governor being appointed as president of the university?
Well, it's an unusual choice. I do not know Governor Daniel, but I'm looking forward to meeting him at the American Association of Universities presidents and chancellors meetings in the fall. You know, I don't think you necessarily have to be of the academy in order to be a great leader. I hope he does a lot of listening and learning as he becomes the president in the fall. And I have great hopes that he will learn from us and we will learn from him, because he certainly brings a very different perspective and a very different set of life experiences.
Well, people who, university presidents and chancellors and people who are in administration who do have PhDs, they don't have PhDs in being university president.
No.
They have PhD in something else. And then they go into administration and sometimes manage to continue to do whatever it was that they trained in.
Yes.
What makes someone want to do this, to go into higher ed administration?
Well, I was drawn into it slowly, first becoming the chair of a department of physiology and then the dean of a college of biological sciences and finally getting to be the provost and then interim president and now chancellor. And so I was introduced to higher levels of administration slowly. And with each step, what really attracted me was the possibility of having influence over a larger number of issues and being able to lead in higher education, which I, particularly public higher education, which I feel is such an important area if we are going to thrive as a country or help the planet, is educating the next generation of leaders is to me one of the most exciting professions that one could be in.
Why is it, though, that seems to, particularly with lawmakers, why is it that seems to be such a hard sell, that they seem to, rather than thinking about the higher education institutions as being an economic engine for the state, right, they just think of it as being a drain on the coffers?
Well, maybe because we don't do a very good job of educating them, you know. I think we need to present them with the product that they get for their money, for their investment, and we need to do it over and over again. We need to put it in language that resonates with them. They have a lot of other things that they need to deal with, and so we need to convince them that we should be one of their top three priorities for expenditures for the state, because the value added, when you have a great university like Illinois has in the state, is hard for me to imagine that people don't understand. But, you know, I'm in it every day, all the time. And so I know what this is all about, and I just need to do a better job.
We have a couple of minutes left. We'll try to do at least one more caller. This is someone here on the campus, line one. Hello.
Is it line two?
Yeah. Oh, yes. Go ahead. Yes.
Oh, Chancellor Rice, I've had the pleasure and honor of meeting you lately. I'm very impressed with your stance on issues, and particularly with your stance on shared governance. The question that I have is, as you know, the present Dean of Engineering, Dean Ilhasamy Adesita, had his 5-year review just lately. And one of the criticisms was his stance on well, there was a language issue, but that's neither here nor there. One of the issues was his apparent incongruence with faculty expectations of engineering in shared governance. And I wonder how you know, it seems to me that that's a very important issue, and I wonder how you're going to negotiate that with him as in his new position as a provost. And that's the question, and I'll listen. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I talked with Adi about this during the interview process. I didn't talk with him about the criticism that he had might have received, but I did talk with him about the importance of shared governance. I believe that he has total respect for this. I believe he's already met with some of the faculty leaders in the Faculty Senate. He's certainly gone around and spoken with virtually all of the deans already and many faculty members, and will continue to do that. So I don't think he and I will differ at all in our respect for the importance of shared governance and the fact that we actually learn more and make wiser decisions when we have that knowledge base. So I am not not afraid of what might be in the future. I just don't believe that he has any problem with listening to faculty and learning from them. That does not mean that he or I will always go along with faculty opinions. In fact, it would be hard to be always listening to all of them, since the faculty themselves differ in what they think should be done.
We have a couple minutes left here. Let me ask one other thing, just because this is recently in the news. The university has just now wrapped up its biggest fundraising campaign ever, bringing in a very impressive $2.43 billion. This is Brilliant Futures. What are you going to do with that money?
Well, that's for the whole university. That's not just for our – I mean, that's not –
Oh, it's not your personal $2.4 billion?
No, okay. No, that's number one. Number two, we did surpass our goal by over 10%, so we raised over $1.6 billion of that. Much of it is earmarked for specific programs or specific scholarships or specific faculty members, that is faculty chairs and endowed chairs and endowed professorships. So those will definitely go to enrich those areas. Other parts of it are discretionary, and we will certainly look very carefully at what we think are the most important areas that require investment, and we will do that as well.
Yeah. I suppose one specific thing that I was wondering was that some of that was indeed going to go into grants or scholarships.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because that seems, again and again, you know, when you talk about what are the big issues in higher education, access is,
right.
is one of the top things. And, you know, as the state shrinks its contribution, universities can try to tighten their belts. They can raise tuition. But I know many people say that's just not sustainable.
Right.
So what do you do to deal with the ever-increasing cost of a college education?
Right. So we do not foresee the large increases in tuition that have happened over the last 10 years to continue, because we realize that when we do that, it makes it even harder for us to provide access to the qualified students who are qualified to come to Illinois. But we are redoubling our efforts, and this year we are able to give financial aid to students whose family incomes are higher than we did previously, because we've raised more money and because we've put more central money into that pot to be able to provide financial aid. But absolutely, diversity of the student body, whether you're talking about racial diversity, gender diversity, cultural diversity, whatever, really enriches the conversation that the students have in their learning environment. And we count that as sacrosanct, that we will not let that go as tuition rises.
Do you have I'm sure you do. I don't know how you could answer this in a minute, but do you have a vision for the Urbana campus of the University of Illinois, what you would like to see it be 5 years from now or 10 years from now?
I want it to be an even more respected, preeminent, known university around the world for its excellence in the way we provide a learning experience, for the discoveries that we are making, for the way we engage with our community and the world. Was that a minute?
That's pretty good. Oh, that really doesn't leave very much time for you to interview me.
Yeah, well, during our break, I said you're a great interviewer, but not a very good interviewee.
No, I'm really
I want
not.
You to write really a book not. On some of your highlights. And so, because, gosh, with all of these years, over 30 years, we will miss you terribly.
And well, I will say that I have had the opportunity to talk with a lot of interesting and smart folks who have interesting things to say. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that I have anything interesting to say.
Oh, come on.
But the guests, the important thing is the guests know. And if the guests know, I don't have to know.
Oh, please. Are we going to end on that note?
No, we're not going to end on that note. I'm sure it's very difficult to talk about the future, but I guess I'm just, I am really interested in, you know, where you think higher education is going, particularly how the university of the future is going to be different. Because in so many ways, it seems the university hasn't really changed. About 1,000 years.
I believe that we are in revolutionary times for the university and what it can contribute. And I believe that most of the jobs in the future are going to depend upon an education, a college education. I believe that the role that we will be playing in the health of our state and our country is going to be even greater. So I'm confident that if we invest properly in this institution, that we will be able to be a major contributor.
Well, I thank you very much for
thank
being
you.
With us. We appreciate it. Our guest this morning,
we'll
Phyllis Wise, she is the Chancellor of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. I'm sorry we won't get a chance to do this again.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on the show. Yeah. We appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.